former U.S. Army paratrooper, historian, and conspiracy analyst, Tony Arterburn, joined by top researchers and guests, exploring the depths of our hidden history. Expose the crimes and cover-ups that plague our civilization and planet, and patrol the borders of our reality.
Reality. Reality.
From the parapolitical to the paranormal, in the psychological war for your body, soul, and mind. Be a paratruther.
Hey, folks, welcome to Paratruther. This is Tony Arterburn. Episode number 2. I tell you what, I just finished a great episode with my friend Chris Graves. We went over the opening chapter after the biography in Behold a Pale Horse, written by William Cooper. There is a chapter called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, and it's based off of a document that was found in an IBM copier in 1986, and it was dated May 1st, 1979. There's lots of mystery surrounding the document. Is it real? It's a technical manual on human enslavement, but really interesting, and surrounding especially the times that we're in. And you know, this happens to be the day that the Georgia Guidestones were blown up. So much there and a lot happening. And I thought it was a great conversation. But just to warn you all, I got to the end of the show and I'm loading it up and I had one edit to do. And I realized that for every once in a while, it will make this program, StreamYard, will just kick off my microphone and it uses like another microphone, and it doesn't show me anywhere that it's doing that. So I'm hearing myself, you know, I see my Rodecaster lighting up, everything's fine. So you don't get the best audio version of me. It's not something that usually I did it once. Other time I was hosting for David Knight of all things. And it just does that. And unless I have a producer telling me, but Chris could hear me fine. So he wasn't concerned. And anyway, it was a great show either way, and Chris will be back for more. So I hope you enjoy it. This is, again, one of those glitches, and you got to roll with it as a broadcaster, as a podcaster. So I know you guys will understand it. Not my usual quality, but the content's cool. And it was a great conversation. Exactly what I wanted with this podcast, which was just conversations and not worrying about the time. I love live radio. I love the Arterburn radio transmission. I love the challenge of live, but just having that form of let's just talk until, hey, we don't want to talk about this anymore, and don't have to worry about commercial breaks or the hour coming to an end. So really appreciate all of you who download the podcast, all of you that are here, and enjoy Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars with Chris Graves. Talk to you soon. Hey, folks, welcome to Paratruther. I'm Tony Arterburn. I'm joined by one of my good friends, Chris Graves. He is he's what makes up the three searchers for Donald Jeffries. the other researchers being Peter Sikosh and Bob Wilson. And Chris and I have spent a lot of time texting and going back and forth. He finds hidden gems. And I said, hey, Chris, why don't we do a podcast where we just break down and dissect the opening chapter, not the biography of Behold a Pale Horse, but the opening salvo of info in that book written by William Cooper. And it's Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Now, Chris, I know you know this background, but I wanted to go over a little bit for the audience. There's a little bit of a legend and backstory that goes with this chapter. It's not just a chapter in a book. It's actually supposed to be a technical manual. And again, everything I've checked out, this is true. This document was found in 1986 in an IBM copier. It was found at an estate sale. Like, so somebody just bought this copier, and inside the copier was this document called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. And it was dated May 1st, 1979. Now, remember, May 1st is the
celebration of not only communism, but it's the birthday of the Illuminati, May 1st, 1776. And this is, again, I'll read you, this is page 36, Behold a Pale Horse. The Illuminati's declaration of war upon the people of America. And it says, top secret, silent weapons for quiet wars, an introductory program manual, operations research, technical manual, TMSW7905.1. It literally comes out with a technical manual and date in there. And then it welcomes the reader. Now, a little bit of backstory, too. This supposedly was a document that goes back to the first Bilderberg meeting. They'll reference 1954 in here at least once, I think. And of course, that was the first. I don't know if you knew that, Chris.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, the 1954 Bilderberg group, that did stand out to me. Yeah.
So it opens up and it welcomes the reader. Welcome aboard. This publication marks the 25th anniversary of the Third World War, called the Quiet War, being conducted using subjective biological warfare fought with silent weapons. This book contains an introductory description on this war, its strategies, and its weaponry, May 1979. And again, we'll go over, not the entire, I can't read the entire chapter, but there's, I took snippets out. And I wanted to talk to you, Chris, you know, just have a conversation. This is what Paratruth is all about. Just a little bit of, there's no time constraints. It's not live radio. And we can go over, whatever you're thinking, brother. And by the way, welcome to the show. I brought you in, but I didn't welcome you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you, sir.
Great to have you, my friend. So you did some research. I saw the links that you sent and, you know, this chapter, you get from everything from the Wu-Tang Clan, I mean, all sorts through hip-hop. Of course, Behold a Pale Horse was the most read book in prison for many, many years. I don't know. I'm sure it's still one of the biggest ones.
It's huge, yeah.
But yeah, there's so many references to it. When you sent me one of the links, just looking up Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, it brings you to a Wikipedia page. It's the debut album by American hip hop group Kill Army. It was released on August 5th, 1997 through Wu-Tang Priority Records, right?
Yeah.
So, also,
yeah, he was a apparently Mr. Cooper was a big hit with not only the hip hop of the 80s and 90s, those groups, but also the punk rock scene as well. And there were many songs that were based on either Bill's work or Bill himself.
Yeah, I remember that from reading Mark Jacobson's book, Pale Horse Rider. And just fascinating. Yeah. Just the cross-cultural influence that Bill Cooper had. And especially like you wouldn't think, but it's big into hip hop and just creating that that phrase, you know, silent weapons, quiet wars, it really sticks out. It makes you think about what is this? And then you go through this chapter and again, you know, there was supposedly some further technical manuals that were found with it, like mathematical references and things. Almost like electrical diagrams, because if you go through the chapter, it's weird. Like it does read technically and then it goes into explaining. Well, I'll go through in a second, but like it starts with the concept of energy.
Did yes. You read something? I saw all those. Yeah. And it boggled my mind too. It had something. One of the Rothschilds actually is in it too, and he has like a whole theory on basically stealing the public's energy. And he goes, "Yeah, I know exactly what you mean." Like the diagrams, it's like you almost feel kind of like evil just like looking at it or reading some of it.
Right.
It's basically putting the population of the United States like into like a trance or so, or like trying to emasculate, or I don't know what's the right word here, like just dehumanize, you know. And he basically, it goes down like all the different types of energy that you can deplete from the people. Yeah, it's interesting because the mathematics comes into it too. And then that leads to, you know, like the thing with the currency, you know, mess with the economic situation of the populace, and you can control them better. It goes into like even the draft is brought up too.
Yes, we'll go. I want to read some of that too, because it's like a devastating psychological analysis of peer pressure and social pressure for you to fight and for to send your young off to war. It's brutal. I think one of the, I forget which artist it was. It's from the Wu-Tang Clan, because I remember this from Mark Jacobson's book, Pale Horse Rider, and he was saying that maybe it was Kill a Priest or one of them. I forget, but yeah. He's saying that when he read Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, he felt like it was a blueprint for genocide or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the way. And look, this is the opening. You know, obviously it welcomes the reader. So you're assuming that the person is a Bilderberg attendee.
Yeah.
And then it's like security.
Someone in the know.
Yeah, security. It is patently impossible to discuss social engineering or the automation of society, i.e. the engineering of social automation systems, silent weapons, on a national or worldwide scale without implying extensive objectives of social control and the destruction of human life, i.e. slavery and genocide. This manual is in itself an analog declaration of intent. Such a writing must be secured from public scrutiny. Otherwise, it might be recognized as a technically formal declaration of domestic war. So they're saying this is, again, it's supposed to be hidden from public view. Furthermore, whenever any person or group or of persons in a position of great power and without full knowledge and consent of the public uses such knowledge and methodology for economic conquest, it must be understood that a state of domestic warfare exists between said person or group of persons and the public.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's an opening declaration of war on society, on mankind.
It sounds very healthy, you know.
Did you find anything out? Did you look when you were looking through your research, Chris? Did you see anything with the story, the origin story of this document? How it ended? I mean, I know a little bit about some of the like the hands it passed through to get to Bill, but I'm more concerned. I find the story fascinating of how it was found. Like that's true. It's like that portion of it. Whether or not Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars is a true technical manual, right, or maybe it was copied from something that's more along the lines of that manual, but right, it really was found in a copy machine.
Yeah.
Nowhere near the date of like it's May 1st, 1979, and just happened to be found in a copier.
In 1986.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's a hoax or not, it's kind of spot on with where society has gone since, you know, since 1954.
That's a good observation. Yeah. I mean, so we haven't, are we more free or less free? Are we more secure or less secure? You know, do we have more opportunity or less opportunity? Are we dumbed down or are we enlightened? I mean, you think about our ancestors going back two or three generations.
Yeah.
I mean, could we solve the same problems that they solved? I don't know.
That's the thing. Yeah. Everyone thinks like, oh, we're so advanced now, but you take away all the fancy gadgets and the technology and everything that we have now. Do people really know how to do basic, you know, simple things, you know, like with tools or and whatnot? I mean, without being like, oh, I got to look at a YouTube video to tell me how to, you know, change a tire, you know, especially the generation now, you know, I think they'd just be, people would be lost. I mean, without the cell phone, especially, you know, or the internet.
Yeah. We're supposed to have flying cars and space travel. And instead we have monitoring apps that take pictures of your food.
Food.
Pictures of my food. I can tag myself here.
Yeah. You have candy, video games on your phone. I mean, yeah, real beneficial stuff, you know. I think that really does play into the dumbing down of the people, actually, you know.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to what I discuss a lot, you know. Like I tell people all the time, like everything that you're watching, like if you're looking at your current reality, everything that we're seeing roll out, the two words that always stick out to me are on purpose. Like this is, this is not a, history is not an accident. Reality is not an accident. You know, there is a plan behind things, and
social
engineering. If you apply silent weapons for quiet wars, you, it makes a lot of sense. Historical introduction. This is the next one of the next paragraphs. Silent weapon technology has evolved from operations research, OR, a strategic and tactical methodology developed under the military management. And it's talking about Eisenhower during World War II. The original purpose of operations research was to study the strategic and tactical problems of air and land defense with the objective of effective use of limited military resources against foreign enemies, i.e. logistics. It was soon recognized that those in positions of power, the Council on Foreign Relations, that the same methods might be useful for totally controlling a society, but better tools were necessary. Social engineering, the analysis and automation of society, requires the correlation of great amounts of constantly changing economic information, data. So a high-speed computerized data processing system was necessary, which could race ahead of society and predict when society would arrive for capitulation.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about this too, like it's written in this language that is devoid of prose or emotion. It really, if you've ever read technical manuals in the military, like I have, it has this same kind of cadence. So somebody, whoever was wrote this, or again, and
if it's a hoax or not,
it has some validity with it being a manual.
They did their homework. If it was a hoax, you know, they got everything down, like you were saying.
It is absolutely bizarre, and I'm glad you're here. This is one of those. This is what I wanted to do with Paratrooper, was just take time and go through documents like this, and and talk to researchers like yourself, just to bounce things off of, because this is what I do with my spare time mostly. Is I'll just read stuff like this or go over stuff like this and wonder, like, this is truly bizarre. And hey, I'm surprised it doesn't get more play.
Like
people don't, I know that it's they've taken, because no one owns Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, so it gets bounced around. I mean, they put it out on different formats.
It's like public, audio. It's like public domain, you know?
Yeah, it's public domain. Let's see. Political introduction. In 1954, it was well recognized by those in positions of authority that it was only a matter of time, only a few decades, before the general public would be able to grasp and upset the cradle of power. For the very elements of the new silent weapon technology were as accessible for a public utopia as they were for providing a private utopia. Oh, that's interesting. The issue of primary concern, that of dominance, revolved around the subject of the energy sciences. And this is where you get into, and they're talking about energy way beyond like electricity or petroleum, coal. That's not really what they're talking about.
No, not at all.
it really, I mean, it ties directly into currency, and they're thinking in almost metaphysical wavelengths, I think.
Yeah, and then it goes into how you can control even more, like with the economic, you know, tools, like it says paper, you know, they don't even say, you know, money or dollars or whatever, you know.
In order to implement this objective, it was necessary to create, secure, and apply new weapons, which is, as it turned out, were a class of weapons subtle and sophisticated in their principle and operation and public appearance, as to earn for themselves the name silent weapons. In conclusion, the objective of economic research, as conducted by the magnates of capital and banking, and the industries of commodities, goods, and services, it is established of the economy, which is totally predictable and manipulatable. In order to achieve a totally predictable economy, the low-class elements of society must be brought under total control, i.e., must be housebroken.
So we're all dogs, you know?
Yeah, and this is how it started. Like keeping, so in order to control through this silent weapon, you have to dumb down. And it's like the quality of education given to the lower class must be of the poorest sort, so that the moat of ignorance isolating the inferior class from the superior class is and remains incomprehensible to the inferior class. With such an initial handicap, even bright lower class individuals have little, if any, hope of extricating themselves from their assigned lot in life. This form of slavery is essential to maintaining some measure of social order, peace, and tranquility for the ruling upper class.
If this, is legitimate.
Yeah, this is going to be a chapter of energy, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, and if this is legitimate and they're using the term slavery, I mean, you know, that's exactly what they're, you know, we've been, the middle class and the lower class, that's exactly how we've been treated for decades now, you know? And it just reminds me a lot of like Henry Kissinger type, you know, mentality, you know?
Right.
Like with that draft chapter, the reference to the draft, just how I think Henry Kissinger referred to the troops as, didn't he refer to the troops as like dogs or like just pawns and things like.
Yeah. And he also called like people in the third world useless eaters.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple of songs, punk songs that were called that too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
yeah. He,
well, a real humanitarian.
Yeah. Was, real charmer.
Yeah. He's the only person that I know of off the top of my head who wrote a book while he was a professor, advocating the practical use of tactical nuclear weapons in real life.
Yeah.
Like in just using them in regular warfare, yeah. By the way, you can look that up. He wrote that before he became national security advisor for Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
When a silent weapon is applied gradually, the public adjusts, adapts to its presence and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their lives until the pressure, psychological via economic, becomes too great and they crack up. Therefore, the silent weapon is a type of biological warfare. It attacks the vitality, options, and mobility of the individuals of a society by knowing, understanding, manipulating, and attacking their sources of natural and social energy and their physical and emotional strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about in terms of energy. And then you right off the page, you get this quote from Mayor Amschel Rothschild.
Yep.
Give me control over the nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws. You know, that's funny. You get six paragraphs into this thing and you already got a quote from Rothschild.
Yeah. That's what stuck out too. I'm like, great.
Yeah. Today's silent weapon technology is an outgrowth of a simple idea discovered, succinctly expressed, and effectively applied by the quoted Mr. Mayor Amschel Rothschild. Mr. Rothschild discovered the missing passive component of economic theory known as economic inductance.
Yeah.
He, of course, did not think of this discovery in these 20th century terms. And to be sure, mathematical analysis had to wait for the second industrial revolution. This is interesting. It mentions the second industrial revolution, right?
Yeah.
What are we talking about now in terms of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum? It's the fourth, right? He's talking about it's the Great Reset and the fourth industrial revolution.
creepy stuff, you know?
Really weird. Yeah. So, yeah, right off the bat. And then translating into using this component of energy.
Yeah, they go into that. They go into conductors and time flow relationships and self-destructive oscillations. And it really, I mean, like, again, if it's not a hoax, it is quite the blueprint, you know. And actually, it plays into what Bill was talking about. Bill was basically, you know, with the prediction thing, he basically predicted that the school shooter phenomenon would become a phenomenon about 10 years before it really started to catch on, you know, kind of replaced the serial killer phenomenon from like the 60s and 70s, if you really think about it, because now we don't really have, you know, like the you know, the Ted Bundys, you know, we don't have like the superstar serial killers, you know. Now it's these random spree shooters, you know. That's
I have not thought of that. Yeah, where are the Dahmers and the Bundys? And
that's, yeah.
I mean, not
that's,
that I welcome, not that I welcome them back. It seems that they change, like, you know, I was talking yesterday, and I don't really think this is a deviation, because you talk about things that Bill Cooper predicted, and in the realm of silent weapons and dumbing things down and controlling, you know, using biological, psychological warfare. Do you realize, I mean, if you're trained in the military, like I've been, and I've been with some stellar combat veterans, like people that are way above my level. And I talked yesterday on hosting David Knight's show about how I know a recon Marine that was in elite unit. And then later in life, like they made a video game over about his unit, and like his son plays like his character, not that it's his name, but like where he would be in the relative to this squad, right, or these people.
Right.
And he told his son, he's like, that's not accurate, because if you're going to be in that situation, your sights are going to be shaking, because you're going to be shaking, because you're going to be scared, you mean, out of your mind. And even though I don't care how hard you train, you're scared, you're terrified, and you're just hoping you can get through this, even with all that training, all that background and everything. And then somehow these kids and they all have a type, are able to have massive body counts. Now, I know they hit soft targets, but just to kill in general is, I don't think, is a natural human act. Like, it's something you have to harden yourself to. You have to develop that. I mean, you go back to the history of our military, in the U.S., I mean, we used to use like the round targets and just like normal targets for shooting. And then they'd send the people off to World War One, the soldiers, the doughboys, and there wasn't an effective kill ratio. So they changed the targets in World War II. And then by the time I was in the military, they called them Ivans, and they were, you know, in the shape of a human, and they would pop up. Right. And they weren't stationary. They would pop up and move. And then you'd have like electronic simulation. So they tried to anesthetize, desensitize the mind to killing. But what's so weird about these times, and you're so right, that's a brilliant insight, Chris, because I'm like, that there is no,
I have to give the credit to another, besides Mr. Cooper, my other the other top, out of the top two, I'd say Donald Jeffries as my third. But the second one was a guy named Dave McGowan, and he wrote a whole book about that, what I just said, called Programmed to Kill. And he actually he had the belief that the serial killer phenomenon was basically engineered, just like and he also had another theory, he wrote another book that basically went into the idea that, you know, the whole hippie movement was created, engineered as well, by elements of the military to destroy the anti-war movement in the end. And with Charles Manson, was kind of like the dark side of the hippie movement, and then you had the opposite side would be, you know, like the Abby Hoffmans and things like that. But yeah, it wasn't my theory, believe me, when I thought about it though. And then when you pair it with Mr. Cooper predicting the school shooter thing, I think Dave McGowan actually did mention that once too. He goes, isn't it weird how we don't have serial killers anymore, like these superstars? They kind of just went away. And now you got these random spree shooters that just pop up everywhere. And it was like one replaced the other.
Yes.
But they both were used for trauma-based mind control, basically. And that's kind of what this document is going into, you know, breaking down society, keeping everyone scared of each other, and, you know, just going to work, just being blinded by, you know, reality television, things like, you know, all these distractions.
That's a great insight. And yeah, I'm just talking about that, thinking about this document in 1979. Yeah. Something else happened today that we didn't mention, which is somebody bombed the Georgia Guidestones, which were,
that's right.
I wanted to do a show with you. We'll do that hopefully soon on the year 1979, because I wanted to like take years in history and then reverse engineer the conspiracy from them. Because talking to the author, James Perloff, who wrote Truth is a Lonely Warrior. And this was about like last year. And he just happened to bring up 1979. And he's like, very important year. I was like, I think the same thing, because there was so much stuff that came out of that. And, you know, whether you're talking about terrorism or the beginning of Al-Qaeda and Tim Osman, which is Osama bin Laden, but the Georgia Guidestones, Saddam, right? Exactly, yep. Right. The Georgia Guidestones come out in 1979, and right. I can't confirm this. It looks like, I mean, they may be demolishing the rest of them. I don't know. I have to confirm that, but I saw that on a Twitter thread, and again, you never know how reliable that is, but I mean, somebody blew it up. I mean, somebody literally blew it up, and I tweeted out. I was like, you know, and again, this is just a question, but I said, is Ted Turner going to be able to channel the ghost of R.C. Christian to see if there's a continuable warranty on this thing?
Yeah.
It's funny. It's like the whole deal about the Guidestones is they repeat the phrase, leave room for nature, right?
Right.
And I'm like, well, now we leave room for more nature because you park those stupid Guidestones, you know, telling that we should get rid of 95% of the humanity. You know, you think about Ted Turner is always talking about reducing the population. I don't know what it is about people when they get a certain amount of income. I don't know if you get a card in the mail, you become a member of the depopulation club or.
Yeah, you would think that they would want as many, you know, slaves or, you know, peasants as possible because, you know, if you got all the money, but you only got like 100 people still alive, your money's not really going to matter that much if you don't have anybody to like serve you, you know?
Yeah, they don't think of people as a resource. Let's see, all of mathematical theory developed in the study of one energy system, e.g., mechanics, electronics, etc., can be immediately applied to the study of another energy system, economics. So they list this again. This is this is really apt too because everything flows through our system of fiat currency, the fake money, monopoly money controlled by monopolists in real time, being able to create some. This is our Federal Reserve is like, you know, there's many people that link the Babylonian money magic. I mean, like going back to ancient times, you know, to the Tower of Babel and Nimrod and the Rothschilds. I don't know if they say this publicly, but they see themselves as descendants of Nimrod, which is, you know, the Tower of Babel and the. And I, as a soldier in northern Iraq, I supposedly went to Nimrod's palace in right. some of the ancient ruins. But yeah, they think that they hearken back to that and. They probably do because this is like the achievement of creating this economic alchemy. Like that's what they were looking for. Although, you know, the philosopher's stone and even people like Isaac Newton were looking for like formulas to create, you know, that's what, you know, alchemy is the getting gold from base metals, you know.
Right. Right.
In this chapter is Mr. Rothschild's energy discovery. What Mr. Rothschild had discovered was the basic principle of power, influence, and control over people as applied to economics. That principle is when you assume the appearance of power, people soon give it to you. Mr. Rothschild had discovered that currency or deposit loan amounts had the required appearance of power that could be used to induce people into surrendering their real wealth in exchange for the promise of greater wealth. They would put up real collateral in exchange for a loan of promissory notes. Mr. Rothschild found that he could issue more notes than he had backing for, so long as he had someone's stock of gold as a persuader to show for his credentials or to his customers. Yeah. Again, just starting out with the economic part of it. And then as we've seen, like this is released in supposedly 79 and the year I was born. And then, you know, all these years later, 42 years later, we're talking about the massive money supply that's been created by the Federal Reserve. I mean, Chris, I mean, it boggles the mind. I mean, you always would hear like, well, since the Federal Reserve was enacted in 1913, our currency's been devalued by 98%. Yes, that's true. But then you look at the accelerating rate of that devaluation. And I mean, you can just look at the year 2000, the total debt of the US was 5 trillion. So like from the founding of the country until the year 2000, 5 trillion. Yeah. That's how long it took to get to that number. Now we're at 30 trillion.
Yeah. There's not really a balance there, I'm not seeing.
So think about that accelerate, because like once you get to this point, it becomes I mean, the numbers are just, again, staggering.
I think, you know, I can't really back this up, but I have a sneaking suspicion that September 11th, 2001 had something to do with that bump up to 30 trillion that we're facing now. Just because it was like they just could just print the money, like, you know, with W, you know, just unlimited war budget, you know. I think that plays into it. And then you got, like, you said it was $5 trillion by 2000, and yet the Pentagon loses $2.3 trillion.
But 2001.
Then we don't hear anything else about it, you know, because
the day before 9/11. I bring that up all the time because I think it's one of those watershed moments of history where Donald Rumsfeld, the day before 9/11, is getting up before the press corps and said, "We can't track $2.3 trillion."
Yeah.
And then guess what part of the trillion is either?
Oh, yeah, I know. And guess what part of the Pentagon got hit?
The accounting office,
where they were auditing that. Yep, that's right. But none of that's, you know, nothing to see here, folks. You know.
And this is where you get to that portion where you mentioned the paper inductor.
Yeah.
In this structure, credit presented as a pure element called currency in quotations. Has the appearance of capital, but it is in fact negative capital. Hence, it has the appearance of service, but it is in fact indebtedness or debt. It is therefore an economic inductance instead of an economic capacitance. And if balanced in no other way, will be balanced by the negation of population, war, and genocide. The total goods and services represent real capital called the gross national product. And currency may be printed up to this level and still represent economic capacitance. But currency printed beyond this level is subtractive, represents the introduction of economic inductance, and constitutes notes of indebtedness. And this is funny because before I ever read this, there's an old saying by J.P. Morgan, one of the original banksters. He said, gold is money. Everything else is credit. And I updated that. Gold and silver are money. Everything else is debt, because there is no credit when you create currency out of thin air. Credit is based off of an asset. It's based off of collateral.
Yeah.
You can't really have credit if there's nothing to back it with. So the new thing, and this is interesting, it's all a series of, because you know that the mere existence of the Federal Reserve means that we can never pay off the debt, Chris.
Right.
Because in order to pay off the debt, what would we have to do? We'd have to borrow more.
Yeah.
So and it's a snake.
And the interest rates, they always dictate that.
It's the creation of it's true evil genius.
It's to keep the future generations in debt, you know, and in slavery, basically.
Yeah, I was going through, and I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. I highly recommend, I mean, the audience, you know, you need to go get yourself a, you can find it even on Kindle if you just want to, you know, get the cheaper version, but, and get yourself a copy of Behold a Pale Horse, because it's, and I don't know about you, Chris, but I was thinking you and I would just go through some of these chapters and Behold a Pale Horse, just having these conversations.
Yeah, we've got,
like, Report from Iron Mountain and a bunch of documents that,
Bill, Mr. Cooper was all about the Iron Mountain report too.
Yeah, it's a treasure trove, and it's an interesting book. You know, it's, I think Barnes and Noble, they call it BAF, and they keep it behind the counter.
Yeah.
It's the most stolen book.
It was. Yeah. That it had that distinction for a little while too, besides the prison thing.
Yeah, it does. It has a lot of reputations.
But you know what is the weirdest thing is that with all of that theft of the book, it was a huge, like, it was a bestseller. It was a huge seller. And yet Bill had a real hard time staying afloat, you know, even with his newspaper that he had for a while, that he was paying to keep printed and everything. It's just it just goes to show you, you know, he was a man of integrity, and he didn't get rich off the book, you know.
No, he never did.
This is a lot to me, you know. Then the fact that he's no longer alive either, I mean, that adds a lot of credibility too. You know?
Yeah, and in future podcasts too, I want to talk. I know you've studied Bill Cooper's life, and you know, I even went out last year to his home in Eager, Arizona, and did a broadcast from his driveway.
I went tried to at nighttime, and then I was realized that I'll probably get shot. So
I understand. I was going to do mine at night too, until I drove up there and thought, you know, history could repeat itself here on November 5th. Right. So I decided to do a short broadcast, and I was on Don Jeffrey's show, and right. And then went to the hotel, which was in viewing distance, like you could still see it. And we did another show there, and yeah, I just learned a lot visiting, and there's a treasure trove of things.
I've never known anyone else that actually went and paid their respects to, you know, his gravesite either.
Well, you're the only one I know.
There you go, brother. So this is perfect.
This is great, and this is what I built the Paratruther podcast for. By the way, just I love live radio. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it, but. Podcasts are supposed to be like this, where you're just having a great conversation, and I'm not even looking at the clock.
Awesome. You know,
if it's short, it's short. If it's long, it's long. It doesn't really matter. What matters is the content. Diversion, the primary strategy. Experience has proven that the simplest method of securing a silent weapon and gaining control of the public is to keep the public undisciplined and ignorant of basic systems, principles, and, while one hand, keeping it confused, disorganized, and distracted with matters of no real importance. On the other hand.
Yeah. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. I mean, we are inundated with, and you think of it, it's like we make fun of there's a certain demographic that the mainstream media is able to capture. And we call those people NPCs, non-player characters. But then you get, you know, you literally see like the memes of the chip being removed from the back of their head, like, you know, stay home, stay safe. And then they plug in the vaccine deal, you know, you got to get the vax. And then they take out that chip for what, Ukraine.
That's
and now
right.
Roe v. Wade.
I know. It's like, what?
But the current thing.
It's like they have a whole list, you know, kind of like in here, you know, like one thing is starting to kind of not work so much. All right, we got another shooting, or, well, there's another variant, or there's Godzilla now. There's ET's coming down. Godzilla, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what next?
This wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I mean, even I don't really know what to think of it, but there's even the theory, you know, for years and decades where they thought that NASA was going to fake an alien invasion. I think they called it Blue Beam.
Right.
So you never know.
I mean, me and you should do more on that too, because they got the Tic Tac video and all these things that when it hits Fox News and Tucker Carlson. And then I'm thinking, those don't look like alien aircraft. Those look like something advanced that we're doing. You know, those look like our advanced research projects, things that you hear about when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, it was like when I was a kid, they first released like the pictures of the SR-71 Blackbird.
That's
I remember talking to my grandfather, Nick Davis. He was vice president of Texas Instruments Weapons Division. And he would tell me about, you know, some of the advanced, as a 9-year-old, I was, you know, talking to him about the height of the Cold War. And it was, we'll have to talk about that. He was part of the hydrogen bomb experiments when he was a young man in the Marine Corps.
That actually ties in with Bill, too. Bill actually, at first, because unfortunately, just like with the driver killed Kennedy thing, like Bill kind of, he was able to change his mind when he learned things later on in his life. But you never really get to hear that side of it, because people still cite Bill for being, you know, pushing the alien thing, you know, just like with the driver killed Kennedy thing, that, you know, on both accounts, he actually did, you know, learn from that and changed his mind. He, by the end of his life, he wasn't thinking that all these UFOs and everything were extraterrestrial. He was thinking they were very much man-made, and they were being used for, you know, spying on the public or creating, you know, paranoia and things like that. So that very much did tie into the thing, too, now I think about it. because he didn't say that it was impossible that there were extraterrestrials, but I kind of like based my own thing on that too, because I ended up seeing like one of these weird crafts, like the triangle, black triangle type thing. I saw that craft in 1998, didn't make any noise, made weird maneuvers that no known human vehicle could do, real silent, just, but anyway, yeah, no, he actually thought it was very much man-made and that there was an agenda with that too. Kind of trick the population. So,
well, again, we can talk about that too on another show. But that Werner von Braun, supposedly on his deathbed, talked about like the different levels of deception, and one of them being terrorism, and then like
that's right,
culminating in the fake alien invasion, the threat from space.
Yeah, he said the communism, and then he said terrorism, and then I think he even mentioned something like viruses and things like that as well.
Yeah, we'll have to dig into that too. That's some fascinating.
Yeah,
that's all part of Operation Paperclip too. Which is a big part of our reality. This is achieved, again, this is the diversion, the primary strategy. This is achieved by disengaging their minds, sabotaging their mental activities, providing a low quality program of public education in mathematics, logic, systems, and design and economics, and discouraging technical creativity. Number two, engaging their emotions, increasing their self-indulgence and their indulgence in emotional and physical activities by A, an unrelenting emotional affrontations and attacks, mental and emotional rape, by way of constant barrage of sex, violence, and wars in the media, especially the TV and the newspapers. B, giving them what they desire in excess, junk food for thought, and depriving them of what they really need. Number three, rewriting history and law and subjecting the public to the deviant creation, thus being able to shift their thinking from personal needs to highly fabricated outside priorities. Wow.
Yeah.
Think about that. Being able to shrink their thinking from personal needs to highly fabricated outside priorities. That sounds like everything. In our society, it's the current thing. I'm for the current thing.
Yeah,
screaming. Have you seen some of the videos of the libs of TikTok and people losing their minds after the Supreme Court said, "Well, we'll leave it to the states. I guess that's our bad. Sorry about the 60 million aborted. We're going to overturn Roe. I guess you guys handle it." And then nothing really changed immediately.
Yeah, nothing.
And nothing, some stuff will change somewhat in some of the more conservative states, but these, the people on TikTok and libs are, I had one video of just some lady screaming. And I'm thinking,
yeah, for my own peace of mind, my own mental stability, when TikTok became a thing, I swore I would never look into because I just don't care anymore, like when it comes to these trends and everything, because like we were talking about, like it's just distractions and it doesn't mean anything, and people are doing really horrible stuff on these social media platforms to get the attention and all that, and it's the biggest distraction. So the powers that be, if that was a part of their plan, then bravo.
Well, it's all part of division. We're all supposed to be at each other's throats, divide and conquer. 100%. That's what this is. I mean, I don't believe that history is a series of accidents. I don't think we're all just bumping into each other. And that's what court historians think.
Right.
I think that history, they give it, even Nixon talked about that. Give history a nudge. He talked about opening China. And I really think that's what we are witnessing. Like there are certain parts of history that are natural. I think that history has cycles. Like we talk about a fourth turning, and about every 80 years, there's a big upheaval in society, because you can take it and go 80 years back and it's World War II. 80 years from that is the Civil War. 80 years from that's the American Revolution. It's about 80 to 100 years of the life of a person, and society changes dramatically. Yeah. But I think they know that. And I think that they have think tanks doing scenarios, and probably, they're war gaming out cause and effect. So a lot of these conspiracies, or whatever you want to call them, false flags or manufactured events might be to deviate the stream of history itself, like you would dam a river, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And people like Mr. Cooper would study these things that you just mentioned. And that's how, you know, he even said, I didn't have a crystal ball, folks. I'm just studying like the patterns, you know, of history of, you know, whenever he would be right about something, he'd be like, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm going by the patterns here. And yeah, you're right. I mean, if you even think about just the regular wars in general, like the, besides the 80-year gap, if you think about it, we average a major war every 20 years. And I'm pretty sure that was Fletcher Prouty, of all people. I think he, now, correct me if I'm wrong, you would probably know this. Yeah, have you ever heard the thing where Fletcher Prouty's talking about how he was providing security in like right after World War II? And it was like Shanghai Czech, and it was Roosevelt, Churchill, and they were all having, all these world leaders were having this one like kind of secretive, but not really kind of meeting. And he was one of the security in charge of that. And he overheard that all these, from here on in, because of the nuclear situation, and apparently all, you know, the real powers that be, they're even behind, you know, Churchill and, you know, Stalin and all them. The real powers that be got nervous when the nuclear thing came up, and it was decided that any war from here on in would only be fought in third world countries every 20 years, and there'd be no clear victor. Have you come across that?
I've heard that before.
Okay. And I think it was Fletcher Prouty that had said that.
You need to write that down. We'll pull that up into one of the future podcasts, because I've heard that before, and I need to expound on that, because the bomb became stasis. Like, that's why we haven't had World War III in the terms of way we think of war, like, you know, World War I and II.
Right.
That's because, you know, you go back, somebody like Einstein, they asked him, what kind of weapons will be used for World War III? He's like, I don't know, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones.
Yep.
And so, I mean, this is how, again, there's like pressure valves that are released through these proxy wars. And that's what's so concerning about now. Like, people and leaders have become so corrupt and so dumbed down. And you wonder, like, where does the control end and the politician begin? Like, where are the controllers? How far removed? I mean, is there any degree of separation from the planners? And I don't know, it seems to me like there's a level of entropy from our ruling elite. Like, I'm talking about the people you don't see, because you're talking about long-term plans for world domination. These are like generations in the making. And it's just like any other thing. Like, you see a family business and like two or three generations, or even two generations, and it'll be, you know, failing. And I don't know if they know what they're doing. Like, if we look at what's happening with NATO and Russia, and I mean, they think they might just get a proxy war or a Cold War. What they might get is a nuclear holocaust. And that's what worries me, because I don't think that, I don't have such respect for our ruling elite that I think that they're like, super villains, or I think that they're more like just degenerates with a lot of money.
Sociopaths.
Sociopaths. Like, they're not special, and they're not God Almighty, and they're just fallible. I mean, you take them out of their, you remove them from their power structure, and they're pathetic. I mean, they're pathetic with it, you see what I'm getting at too. It's like,
oh yeah.
And then you read stuff like this, and you realize they have to keep us stupid. They have to keep us at each other's throats. Like, they have to keep us distracted with things that don't matter. Like, most of the stuff that you're programmed to think about when you're a young man, when you get to be an adult, you go, wait a minute, why did I care about that when I was a teenager or in my 20s? I wasted all those years, you know, and no one's really counseling on you on that.
Right.
You're on this prescribed path to be like, something Mike Tyson said once, it's like old too soon, smart too late.
Well, that's the same way. Well, they don't teach, you know, teenagers about, you know, they'll just send them a credit card on their 18th birthday without telling them the dangers of it, you know, and then usually a young kid's going to be like, ooh, I can buy anything I want. Then they're in debt for a few years and they're trying to climb their way out and everything. You know, it's all engineered.
Listen to this. And this has to do with the condition that the elite, that the people that put together silent weapons for quiet wars, it's called the artificial womb.
Mm.
From the time a person leaves its mother's womb, its every effort is directed toward building, maintaining, and withdrawing into artificial wombs various sorts of substitute protective devices or shells. The objective of these artificial wombs is to provide a stable environment for both stable and unstable activity, to provide a shelter for the evolutionary process of growth and maturity, i.e. survival, to provide security from freedom, and to provide defensive protection for offensive activity. This is equally true of both the general public and the elite. However, there is a definite difference in the way each of these classes go about the solution of problems. And this is, again, that's a reference to the elite wants you in that artificial womb, like the artificial, they want you bogged down in the unreal, right? The things that don't matter, like, or engaged in things that don't matter. Like, if you think you're in a struggle, it's like, what did Hillary Clinton call it? It's like the politics of meanings. People need meaning. Like,
yeah,
you know, even they go back to Homer, who, you know, the author of the Iliad, and says, all men need the gods. Like, everybody, people need a cause. They need something outside of themselves. And they force you into either, you know, these enclaves of artificial womb, or they force you into causes that aren't real, like the politics of the politics of, or whatever, what did she call it? The politics of meaning. Yeah. Summary.
She would know, right?
Yeah. So the people hire the politicians so that they can, one, obtain security without managing it. Two, obtain action without thinking about it. Three, inflict theft, injury, and death upon others without having to contemplate either life or death. Four, avoid responsibility for their own intentions. Five, obtain the benefits of reality and science without exerting themselves in the discipline or facing or learning either of these things. To give the politicians the power to create and manage a war machine. Two, and then again, it talks about all the things that they give the politicians the power to do. Provide the survival of the nation, i.e. womb. Prevent encroachment of anything upon the nation or womb. Destroy the enemy who threatens the nation, womb. Destroy those citizens of their own country who do not conform for the sake of stability of the nation, womb. Let's read this again. Number four, destroy those citizens of their own country who do not conform for the sake of the stability of the nation or womb. Does that remind you of this last year, last 18 months? Now you got, I mean, we're all in this together. Why are you being so selfish? Joe Biden said,
get the backs.
Get the back. I'm sick and tired of y'all. Sick and tired.
And y'all, I'm sick and tired of people like him. Yeah, that's all I could think of when he, you know, when he was coming out and saying, you know, those things.
We're getting towards the end of this this little chapter, and then I want to fast forward to talk a little bit about what they mentioned of the draft.
Oh yeah,
and Bill Cooper reads this in the audio version of Behold a Pale Horse. He doesn't read the whole thing.
Right,
he takes excerpts. But I wanted to read a little bit about this concept of the draft as military service. This is even listed in Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, which is interesting because, you know, even Bill Cooper talked about this, but, you know, in his time, you're looking at the Desert Storm. Yeah. And he was like, you're willing to go send your sons off thousands of miles over into the desert to die, but not to protect liberty at home. Like, that's frowned upon. Like, you're thought of as a kook, or you're not patriotic. I mean, it is interesting, like the dichotomy there. Few efforts of human behavior modification are more remarkable or more effective than that of the socio-military institution known as the draft. A primary purpose of the draft or other institutions is to instill by intimidation in the young males of a society the uncritical conviction that the government is omnipotent. He is soon taught that a prayer is slow to reverse what a bullet can do in an instant. Thus, a man trained in a religious environment for 18 years of his life can, by this instrument of government, be broken down, be purged of his fantasies and delusions in a matter of mere months. Once that conviction is instilled, all else becomes easy to instill. Replacing God with the state.
Yep.
Even more interesting is the process by which a young man's parents, who purportedly love him, can be induced to send him off to his death. Although the scope of this work will not allow the matter to be expanded in full detail, that's interesting. Nevertheless, a coarse overview will be possible and can serve to reveal those factors which must be included in some numerical form in a computer analysis of social and war systems. And this is how this thing reads. It's like you said, it's like a blueprint for death.
Yeah. Sick.
And then it breaks down. So the last few pages of Silent Weapons, folks, it breaks down the place of who enforces their, who enforces this system, who enforces the silent weapons. And it comes down to us. We enforce it.
Yeah.
And it comes down to that last, the last little paragraph is enforcement. Factor one, as in every social system approach, stability is achieved only by understanding and accounting for human nature, action, reaction, patterns. A failure to do so can be, and usually is, disastrous. As in other human social schemes, one form or another of intimidation or incentive is essential to the success of the draft. Physical principles of action and reaction must be applied to both internal and external subsystems. To secure the draft, individual brainwashing programming and both to the family unit and peer group must be engaged and brought under control. And it starts with, guess what? The father.
The father.
The father. Factor two, father. The man of the household must be housebroken to ensure that Junior will grow up with the right social training and attitudes. The advertising, media, etc., are engaged to see that to it that father be whipped. You can fill in the blank before or by the time he is married. He is taught that he either conforms to the social notch cut out for him, or his sex life will be hobbled and his tender companionship will be zero. He is made to see that women demand security more than logical, principle, and honorable behavior. By the time his son must go to war, father, with jelly for a backbone, will slam a gun into Junior's hands before father will risk the censure of his peers or make a hypocrite of himself by crossing the investment he has in his own personal opinion or self-esteem. Junior will go to war, or father will be embarrassed. So Junior will go to war, the true purposes notwithstanding. Factor three, the mother. The female element of human society is ruled by emotion first and logic second. In the battle between logic and imagination, imagination always wins, fantasy prevails, material instinct dominates, so that the child comes first and the future comes second. A woman with a newborn baby is too starry-eyed to see a wealthy man's cannon fodder or a cheap source of slave labor. A woman must, however, be conditioned to accept the transition to reality when it comes. And again, it even lists, again, you go out, this is, you got to read this last chapter, folks. It even mentions Ritalin.
Yep.
Yeah, Ritalin can speed the transition for the child. Factor four, Junior. The emotional pressure for self-preservation during the time of war and self-serving attitude of the common herd that have an option to avoid the battlefield. If Junior can be persuaded to go, all of the pressure finally necessary to propel Johnny off to war. The quiet blackmailings of him are the threats of no sacrifice, no friends, no glory, no girlfriends. And then I'll skip over sister, but we'll talk about the last little bit is cattle. Factor six. Those who will not use their brains are no better off than those who have no brains. And so this mindless school of jellyfish, father, mother, son, and daughter, become useless beasts of burdens or trainers of the same.
Have you seen the table of strategies at, like, towards the end there?
Yes. That, you want to read some?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead.
Okay. The table of strategies. It says, do this to get this. It's like two categories. It's like do this and then to get this. It says keep the public ignorant, which means less public organization. Yeah, maintain access to control points for feedback. Required reaction to outputs, i.e. prices, sales. Create preoccupation, lower defenses. Attack the family unit, control of the education of the young. Give less cash and more credit and doles, which basically is more self-indulgence and more data. And it says attack the privacy of the church. And that says destroy faith in this sort of government. Social conformity, computer programming simplicity. Minimize the tax protest. Maximize maximum economic data. Minimum enforcement problems. Stabilize the consent. Simplicity coefficients, tighten control of variables, simple computer input data, greater predictability, establish boundary conditions, problem simplicity, solutions of differential and difference equations, proper timing, less data shift and blurring, maximize control, minimum resistance to control, and finally, collapse of currency, which destroy the faith of the American people in each other. Evil, creepy stuff.
It really is fascinating. And I've been wanting to just do a show on it for a while. I was thinking that deserves not just a reading, but like an overview, like going over this and really digging into, the mechanics of this thing.
Yeah,
it's really fascinating.
Because hoax or not, I mean, it kind of, it's a really good hoax because it kind of has human beings have pretty much followed it, what it says, since 1979 or even going back 1954 or whatever, before that even, And I think, especially when you get something like, when John Kennedy gets his head blown off in broad daylight, I mean, that's a big part of, the trauma-based, mass mind control in a way, because everyone, lost the innocence, that was the beginning. And I think they've been on a roller coaster ever since with all these other things,
Yeah, the main thing is fear and base human emotions, right? The base things, right? And the lizard brain. And brought to you by lizard people.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, also it makes sense too in a way because you keep them scared. That it's easier to control them and to make them do what you want. But if you really think about it, I think with all these random shootings that are not so random, in my opinion, a lot of people, especially people that are all about the Second Amendment. They all think, oh, they're coming for our guns. That's a part of it. But I think the main part is the trauma-based mind control. Like whenever, you think the public there might be an upheaval or something, they roll out another fiasco, I mean, at least the big ones. I do think people do just randomly shoot people sometimes. But
yeah,
I think
that's true.
I think the ones that the media or the mass media concentrate on, you really got to take a closer look at some of those.
Yeah, if it's making the national news, right? If it's being repeated and the same talking points over and over, and you've seen those videos where they have the newscasters and they just keep opening up the boxes on the screen and they're saying the same things. And this, I mean, it's all over the country. That's what I'm talking because yesterday the headline on Drudge or was. 309 mass shootings this year. And if you like what constitutes a mass shooting and what we think of, like Chicago had 71 people shot or some insane number over the holiday weekend, over the July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
I want to read this last little bit. This is the words of Bill Cooper. He says, the real reason why people ignore silent weapons for quiet wars, people are not ready to admit they have been cattle. They are not prepared to fight, and if necessary, die for freedom. It is an indictment of the citizens of the United States of America, and that is the total confirmation of the truth of the information contained in Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Well, I'm glad we went over this, and I recommend to the listener that they go and get a copy of Behold a Pale, just for your library, get a copy of Behold a Pale Horse and read Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars for yourself. Look at the way the language comes off the page. I've been fascinated with this, and that won't be the last time I cover it, but I wanted to, you know, to bring Chris on and get his perspective and do this show for the archives. And this is going to go up on the Arterburn Radio Transmission podcast as well as Paratruther. And I will, if you're subscribing to Paratruther, you subscribe to the Arterburn Radio Transmission and vice versa, folks. If you got, because some shows won't, it won't always interlink. Like not every show will be listed, like especially Arterburn Radio, because sometimes I'll throw up a live show or I'll put up an archive or something. So, you know, it's a good idea to be over there on both. And again, Paratruther and Arterburn Radio Transmission are brought to you by Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. If you need to buy or sell gold and silver nationwide, we're your veteran-owned shop here in Branson, Missouri, wisewolfgoldandsilver.com. I also talk about the need to be prepared in these times, and these are unprecedented times, and it's just peace of mind to have storable food, water filtration. So if there is a breakdown, if there is something that happens, whether it's natural or manufactured or a combination of both, then you'll have something to fall back on. And you can go to preparewithart.com. That's preparewithart.com, and you can get the good folks at My Patriot Supply. You can get their storable food, good for 25 years, water filtration. I use all these products, by the way. You can get seeds, you can get fire starting kits, all that good stuff. Just have a bug out bag, you know, just have some peace of mind. And I've been buying a little bit more lately and just trying to be prepared, because you also got to help others in the next level, folks. And we're going to have a responsibility to help each other. So, Chris, it's been great, brother. I've enjoyed our talk. I hope that that you have too.
Oh, I loved it, man. I can't wait to the next one.
You know. Oh, there's going to be more. So stay tuned. Share the links, folks. Arterburn.news is my website, Arterburn.news. You can find the latest and greatest. You can subscribe there. Most of the podcasts are up there as well. I do a show called America Unplugged every Saturday, 11 a.m. Central Time on rockfin.com with the great Billy Ray Valentine and the legendary Donald Jeffries. We'll be back very soon. Chris, I know, you know, you're kind of a researcher, kind of an enigma. You're hiding in the background. Do you have any social media? You want people to follow you to look you up, sir?
Well, I just say, let me think.
You want to after me?
I have a Twitter handle, but okay. I think it would be more appropriate to hold off on that right now.
Okay. I want to make sure I offer it up, and
I appreciated
your input today, sir. So, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks for everybody for downloading, and we'll be back with more great content very, very soon in the psychological war for your body, mind, and soul. Be a paratrooper. See you next time.